So, Sarah, what are we talking about today, now that the Saw franchise is over?
Oh, no, there's more, Pete.
What do you mean there's more? That doesn't make any sense.
There's more movies.
How? The villain's dead? The apprentice is dead? The heroes are dead?
That was just the beginning.
Just the beginning? What kind of storytelling is this?
There's 10 movies, Pete.
Oh, Jesus, man, we're in the long haul. All right, well, welcome to Fearless Films.
Films is a podcast where two horror movie buffs
hey
break down scary movies for the scaredy cats so they don't have to watch the movie.
So many movies.
There's 10, and Jigsaw dies in the third.
It doesn't make any sense. So I know this can't be going the path of the 80s slashers. We're not going to resurrect Jigsaw from the dead.
No, we do not resurrect Jigsaw from the dead. He is in fact gone.
We're just gonna keep making these movies and keep using flashbacks to continue to have Tobin Bell in the film.
Yes. Yes, right. Exactly.
If that's what we want to do, I guess that's what we're going to do. So, to make sure our audience is up to speed, where we left off, Jigsaw's cancer was getting worse. He had a lady perform home brain surgery on him, but then her angry husband came in and got everyone killed. So our title character is dead, Jigsaw, the villain. His known apprentice, Amanda, is also dead. All the protagonists that we've seen thus far in the traps are dead. At this point, Dr. Gordon's still in the wind. We have no idea what the hell happened to him, but we know Adam's dead. We know everybody in that house is dead except for Detective Matthew's son.
Yep.
And fucking Jeff and his wife are dead.
Jeff.
And their daughter's missing. That was the cliffhanger of the last movie, was that there's a little girl in a box somewhere.
Yes.
And we don't know where she is.
Yes.
So, Sarah, you know, you are picking up the long-held tradition of this podcast where you've now reached the challenge round.
Yeah.
You are going to break down for us both Saw 4 from 2007 and Saw 5 from 2008 in one episode.
Sure am. We'll see how good of a job I do.
Broad strokes.
Broad strokes.
All right, shall we begin?
Let's begin.
I want to play a game.
So Saw 4 is still directed by Darren Lynn Bozeman. This is the last one directed by him until we get to Spiral later on in the series.
Huzzah.
So we open up with the autopsy of Jigsaw, also known as John Kramer. I don't know if I've ever said that the whole time. His real name is John Kramer.
I think we've mentioned it once or twice.
Great. So there, it's a whole autopsy. You see everything. They don't cut anything out.
This is potentially the most graphic scene in the entire franchise.
It absolutely is.
But it's very clinical. So it's not like, you know, gore fest. It's just, you know, doctors doing an autopsy.
Yes. They get to the stomach part of it. They cut open the stomach and this tape pops out. Now, if you remember the last movie, we saw him covering a tape in wax from a melted candle. That was so that he could swallow it so that they would find it during his autopsy.
Gross.
This tape calls out Detective Hoffman, who we met but weren't really introduced to.
He's like one of the background detectives in the previous movie, right?
Yeah, he was the one during the classroom trap where the guy was chained to the floor. That was like all he had to do was.
Yeah.
He's that guy. And the tape basically says, like, you think this is over. This is just the beginning. My work's going to continue.
Despite the deadness of him all.
Yes. We then have this really interesting scene change to what's called the mausoleum trap. Now, this movie, as well as the one beforehand, I just didn't mention it, has these seamless transitions between separate scenes. They're not using digital effects. They're done practically. The sets are built so that two scenes can be filmed in one shot without any interruption.
The camera just drifts into another location.
It's so cool! And this is the first installment in the Saw film series that doesn't open automatically with a character in a trap.
Oh, yeah, good
point. We have a whole scene first.
Yeah. But then we go back to basics.
Yes. So this is the mausoleum trap. So the weird thing about this, in this scene, they didn't play a tape at all. I don't know if it was there, but they didn't play it.
Oh, I don't think I ever realized that.
So there are these two guys, and they're both attached by collars on their necks to, I'm not sure what to call the machine thing, but the machine starts and it'll start to spin and drag the chains further into them.
Wikipedia calls it a large device.
Thank you, Wikipedia! Thanks. But one of them has their eyes sewn shut and the other one has their mouth sewn shut, so they can't really communicate to each other at all.
Because we've reached the point where jigsaw traps are just cruel punishment.
And the one with his mouth sewn shut ends up having to kill the other one because he just starts going crazy and swinging things around. Kills him. He dies with the giant device or whatever Wikipedia called it. And then screams and opens and tears open his mouth. Why didn't you do that in the first place, sir?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. He's just like, and it's like, oh, yeah, there's your solution right there.
Also, you can tell that he's opening his mouth enough that there's a little bit of, like, a slot there. Like, you could have made a noise or something besides, like, you could have said something. Anyhow, we then go to a crime scene, or outside a crime scene, I guess. We have the SWAT team as well as Hoffman. They see, like, a device on the ceiling, so they decide to send in a robot first to check it out, and they're watching the cameras. Our boy Rig...
Hey, Rig is back, and he's a main character now.
He is. Rig sees Carrie. Now, if you remember, in the last movie, she died in the Angel Trap.
R.I.P.
Rig sees Carrie, and he busts through the door, goes right for her, and is essentially yelled at by Hoffman for going through an unsecured door.
Don't you just be kicking doors down. What do you think you are, Wahlberg?
And now the FBI is involved. Agents Perez and Strom are coming in to help out with the investigation. They believe that there's yet another apprentice to Jigsaw. This is because of the way that Carrie was put up there. There's no way that Jigsaw in his physical state or Amanda with her strength could have put Carrie up where she was.
And that's the aha moment for the audience. And also when the series just gets the point of, oh, so we're just going to play that game now, huh? There was another apprentice.
Mm-hmm. So Rig goes home. His wife is leaving to help his mother. There's definitely some tension there. It seems like he's been at work a little too much.
He hasn't been taking care of his marriage.
Nope. Rig does stay behind. He goes to go into bed. And he hears someone in his house. He assumes it's his wife, obviously, so he gets up and tries to talk to her. And guy in the pig mask.
Oink, oink, motherfucker.
We then have this really quick cutscene of a pig mask behind Hoffman, but nothing comes of it.
Mm.
Rig then wakes up in like his bathtub, like the shower started on, and that's what woke him up. The door is rigged, as we have in these traps a lot, so he opens the door and something happens.
Yep.
There's a tape for him that basically says he has to face his obsession about saving everybody and that he's not able to do that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that was the theme of this movie, and I remember how much it, like, of all the Saw movies, this is one of the most infuriating, where Jigsaw is straight up telling this dude what to do, and he can't do it.
Yes, it's less infuriating than Jeff, though.
I mean, Rig is a better human being in general, so yeah. Yes.
On the screen where the tape is playing, we get visual of Detective Matthews.
Hey.
He's in, it looks like an orange prison jumpsuit to me. He's got like a chain around his neck that's attached to the ceiling, and he's standing on an ice block.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's the whole room is involved.
Yes. Next to him is Detective Hoffman, tied to a chair next to him, and he's got, like, a gag in his mouth, but it really doesn't do anything. He doesn't shut up ever.
Oh, no, they've got a couple cops locked up. Well, who cares?
We also see that the door, the end of the tape, near the door, there's, like, a countdown clock. And the same clock is in the room where Detective Matthews and Detective Hoffman are.
So once again, the trap runner, I'm going to call this young adult novel series, has to face the clock and save people before it's too late.
Mm. So then we come to the scalping seat trap. So in the middle of Riggs' living room, I guess, I'm not sure what room we're in, there's a... We learn that she's a prostitute in a trap. Her like, very long hair is, like, twisted into the gears. And he's supposed to understand that, like, you see her as a victim, but Jigsaw's saying, if you see what I see, you'll try to let her save herself.
Yeah.
Well, he does this whole thing. He's supposed to, like, look at the gears and find the combination, and it doesn't... Eventually it works. But, like, after, like, half of her scalp has been peeled off. It's a lot of interesting noises.
Yeah, this one was a pretty gross one.
But, apparently, when she woke up, she had a tape that said, this man's gonna try to save you. If he does, he's gonna turn you in. The only way to free yourself is, like, in the cabinet or whatever, and she pulls out a knife and goes and tries to kill him.
Hooray!
He ends up killing her. There's... more boxes with things in them in this one.
Okay.
There's a box with some keys. It says one will save a life, one will take a life. One of the keys has a motel on it, so he goes to that motel. We're back in the precinct for a minute. There was a bullet casing found at the crime scene where they found Carrie. The prints from the bullet casing are Riggs.
Uh-oh.
I feel like a lot of this movie is set up for the police department to think that Riggs is the apprentice.
We've got a setup going on.
And then someone interrupts and says, we have a call of shots fired from so-and-so address, and someone else goes, that's Riggs' house.
Yep.
So they go all up there.
The game is afoot. I want to say, I guess this makes this the most ambitious Jigsaw trap yet, because the victim literally has to travel around town.
He also could have just been like, nah, fuck this, and not done anything.
Which, I mean, spoiler alert, if I remember correctly, isn't that a way he could have succeeded?
Yes. So we get a little bit of a closer look at Detectives Matthew and Hoffman. In this flashback, we see Jigsaw kind of drag Detective Matthews into this room after he had his fight with Amanda in the last movie. Like, puts a cast on him, gives him the prison jumpsuit, and, like, keeps him in this room and is, like, feeding him periodically.
Yeah, face obscured, of course.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Back at Riggs' place, there are pictures all over where the, what I call it, the scalping seat was.
Yeah.
And it's, we'll learn further into the movie that it's all of the victims of the traps are pictured there. But Strom sees that there's a picture that doesn't fit, and it's Jill Tuck, who is Jigsaw's ex-wife.
Oh, we finally get to the ex-wife.
We then go and have this whole interrogation with Jill Tuck, who is done with the police. She's like, I don't understand what else you need from me. And Strom is just not having it, and he's in her face, and it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yep.
So Rig is now at the motel. He goes and opens the door for that key. There's a tape saying, like, the guy at the front desk has done some stuff. He didn't pay for his crimes. You know, you're going to help him out. Basically. And says, like, there are cameras everywhere, so you have to hide your identity, and there's a pig mask. And instead of putting on the pig mask, thank goodness, he just kind of, like, goes to the top of the stairs and, like, does, like, a come-hither kind of voice, and the dog that's there is like, oh, what are you? And gets the guy to come upstairs.
Not implicating himself any further than he already is.
Yeah. We get a quick scene of, Jill Tuck's background. She opened this, I think it's a methadone clinic.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was supposed to be a methadone clinic.
Yeah. She opened this clinic where she helps people, or she's trying to help people. And
I think it was also supposed to be like a low cost and also sometimes she helps people for free type of thing.
Yeah, and John just doesn't really see the point. He's like, you can't help these people if they don't want to be helped.
Very cynical, this Jigsaw. Yeah. Who would have guessed?
We also get a sneak peek at John's workshop. The first one, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Back at the motel, there's an adjoining room to the first room that Rig opened up. Gonna put a trigger warning right here. In this bedroom trap, we find out that the guy at the front desk is essentially a rapist and did not pay for any of his crimes. So Rig kind of helps him into restraints for his wrists and his ankles. And what he's supposed to do, Rig hands him two other things too, that if he presses the button, these like sharp things go into his eyes and they'll release.
Oh, I remember this now. Yep. Yeah, that's fucked up.
If he, you know, like kills both of his eyes, it'll release his restraints. But if not, he's essentially going to get his limbs ripped off. His limbs get ripped off.
This is a lose-lose situation. And yeah, he fucking dies, because yep. Who's got the willpower to impale their own eyes on
spikes?
He
impaled one eye.
Oh yeah, he got one.
He got one.
God.
Rig gets a note to go back to where it began. We get this flashback of him talking to a young girl at a school who is very clearly abused by her father, and the wife's letting it happen.
Tale as old as time.
Yes. We then... Ooh, this is the part I have trouble with. We then get...
Just now?
another trigger warning, folks. We then get a scene of Jill Tuck closing the clinic, and one of her regulars, Cecil, is knocking on the door, and he's like, I left my coat in, like, can you just go grab my coat for me, whatever. And she grabs it for him, and he ends up kind of pushing her in. He's like, unlock the door, because he wants to go take whatever the hell's in there. And when he comes back, forgot to mention, this is a very pregnant Jill Tuck, like a 7-month pregnant Jill Tuck.
Mm.
When he comes back, he slams the door against her stomach and she starts bleeding. And they lose the baby.
Yeah, this franchise just adding reason after reason for Jigsaw to have gone insane and become a villain.
Right?
Like, it was enough what we had in the first couple movies, and they're like, but also, his wife lost a pregnancy when a meth head attacked her. Like, come on.
So that happened before his cancer diagnosis and everything.
Yeah, yeah. There's just layers to the series. They just keep adding them.
Yeah, they do. Strom is still interrogating Jill Tuck. He's interrupted to go to the motel crime scene.
Because the cops are one step behind Rig the entire movie.
Yes. They then find this, like, property that I think that Jill co-owns or something, but they go in, Perez and Strom see a camera, and they're like, well, what does this mean? There's, like, files on the table with, like, writing, like, obviously they were expecting them. And earlier, Perez had mentioned, like, in Carrie's last letter to us, she said that two people on the force were in danger of being Jigsaw targets, and Strom is like, what the heck, what's this mean? And the other one's like, it means we're the targets.
Dun, dun, dun.
So now we see that there is a third person coming into the room with Detectives Hoffman and Matthews. This person is Art Blank, who we then see from flashbacks is the guy who survived the trap in the beginning of the movie.
Oh, no mouth.
Yes. He is also Jill Tuck's lawyer. He is also the lawyer who defended the man from the motel and got him off.
Oh.
And then, in another flashback of the school scene, we see that the dad comes out and is like, oh, yeah, well, you know, kids say silly things, and Rig fucking loses it and hits him. And Art Blank is also the lawyer for the dad.
Ah, so this guy's connected to everything.
Yes. So now Rig is at the school, and this is the spike trap.
I don't remember the spike trap.
I'm saying trigger warning again.
This movie's full of them.
So these two, the man and the woman from the beginning, the abusive guy and his wife, are back to back, and they are essentially stuck together through giant spikes going through their bodies.
Oh, it's coming back to me now.
The spikes in the man are through, like, major arteries and stuff. The ones in the woman are not. They're through places where, like, she can survive from the blood loss. And it's, the trap basically says, like, it's on her to save herself now.
Right.
And she pull, we watch her pull out these spikes. And the guy's just like, what are you doing? And she's just like, ah! And when Rig gets there, there's still one more spike. And she's like, I almost did it. I just need, can you please help me get this one out? And Rig helps her get this one out. And then he gives her a key. Says one can save a life. It's that one. Gives her a key. And he's like, all right, now you need to save yourself. Almost all the way through the movie, Rig. Good job.
Good job. You saved one person so far.
There's then a note in the classroom for Rig to go home. But he notices that
already home.
He notices that the font that the G is written in is different. We also get flashbacks that it's the same G on the knife that was in his house and the same G on the cuffs from the restraints from the motel room. So now he's trying to figure that out.
It's a weird connective clue.
And as he walks out of the school, he pulls the fire alarm so that the authorities are alerted.
Gotta keep them busy in their B-plot.
So Strom and Perez are now at the classroom, figuring out that Art Blank's also the lawyer for Jill and for one of their victims. And that, I was a little confused in this. One of them co-owns the school that they're in, which is very confusing to me. But
what?
Because, yeah, I know. But because of that, they end up searching the building. And we have Billy with a tape.
Oh, you just made me remember what's about to happen. I totally forgot it was a thing.
Billy with a tape, and Perez goes to play the tape, and then Billy starts to, like, whisper. It's really hard to hear it. And Perez leans in, and then Billy's face, like, explodes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this, like, powder all over Perez, and there's shards of glass in her, and it doesn't end well. It's not good.
Basically, his face turns into a shrapnel bomb.
Yes.
And she is seriously injured.
Yes.
Also, I love how you said Billy begins to whisper, not the recording is whispering.
Well, his mouth moves.
You're anthropomorphizing the puppet.
Yeah. He's, like, riding a bike by himself in one of the movies, okay? What do you want?
It's remote control.
We then get a quick scene back where Detective Matthews is. Art gives him a gun and one bullet and is basically like, here you go. And that's it. We see a bit of an argument between Jigsaw and Art Blank. We then watch...
Oh, is that like when Art goes to visit him at, like, his workshop?
Yep.
Like, post losing the baby, and he's just like, I'm just mad now.
Yes. Like, they're in the middle of a divorce, I think, and Art's like, what's up, buddy? You're not answering my calls. And Jigsaw's like, go fuck yourself. Okay.
I'm planning how to get revenge on the world.
We also watch Jigsaw essentially kidnap Cecil at, like, a Year of the Pig Chinese carnival, which is where the pig mask comes from. He's putting,
Yeah, this is the pig origin story movie.
What's the thing you... Chloroform. I think it's chloroform. Like, on a cloth and then in the pig mask and, like, puts it on Cecil's face.
Yeah.
And then we see Jigsaw's first ever trap, the knife chair.
Which, it's basic, but it's very him.
So Cecil is in a chair and he's, like, connected to the chair with his wrists. Like, his wrists are bleeding, so if he stays idle, he'll bleed out. And then Jigsaw puts this like, set of, like, 8 or 10 knives that are, like, crisscrossed in front of Cecil's face, and he has to push through the knives with his face to release himself.
Yeah.
Which, ow.
Which is just so fucking early 2000s edgy.
And then he, like, gets out of it, and then goes to run after Jigsaw to, like, attack him, and Jigsaw moves, and Cecil falls in this, like, thing of barbed wire.
And, like, yeah, thrashes around until he dies.
And, like, okay, goodbye, Cecil.
I love that scene, too. I can remember that moment clearly, because, like, Jigsaw gives him a moment, and he's like, all right, you can leave now, don't attack me, even though you're obviously gonna attack me. And when Cecil rushes at him, he literally just calmly steps to the side, yeah. And he just goes flying into a pile of barbed wire.
Mm-hmm. So we're now at a meatpacking place called the Gideon Building, with the same G that we were looking at before. I don't quite understand how Rig got there, but I guess that's not the point.
Yeah.
There's a note for Rig that basically tells him to have some patience. We see... We get more of a view of the room Detective Matthews is in, and we see that up above him, there are two ice blocks on the ceiling that look like they're rigged to fall, to, like, smash his head.
Oh, they're on, like, lever arms, yeah.
Yeah, and Art Blank is, like, tracing it and realize that he's, like, attached, they're attached to the door opening, and he's like, oh, you better hope he doesn't come through that door. And then Detective Matthews, like, the rest of his lines are, who's coming through the door? Who's coming through the door?
Yeah, he goes into full freak-out mode and just starts Wahlberg yelling. just flipping out.
Rig finds an empty box. Not very helpful. We also now see that Strom is in the building.
Hey, everyone's coming together.
He's like a few steps behind Rig. Strom ends up finding on the floor a keychain picture of Jeff and his family. It looks like it got dropped and, like, broken. We then see that Art Blank is also in his own trap. We get a flashback of after the mausoleum trap that he then was able to find a tape recorder and a manila envelope of, like, instructions.
Which just not seem fair. The dude gets out of one trap and then immediately is just like, by the way, I need you to do something else for me.
I know, but now I'm curious as to what the other guy's thing would have been if the other guy lived.
I know, right? I mean, I don't think the other guy would have been useful. He was blind.
True. Art's trap, I guess, is called spine cutters. It's this thing that's attached to him and there's little spiky thingies that are going to go, like, right through his brainstem if it gets triggered.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's cool, but, like, okay, an engineer can only do so much, all right? Like, this is just getting crazy.
And then here's where things get complicated, because now we cut to Jeff.
Fucking Jeff!
Who is still roaming the hallways. This is where we learn that this movie and the previous movie were all taking place at the same time.
Motherfucker. Which is why we didn't really see Rig in the last movie.
Right. So... Jeff is still kind of going through the halls, like he's finished his last trial. That's about where he is there. All three of them, we get like little cuts back and forth of all three of them going through the halls. We see Jeff come upon Lynn. We see Amanda and Jigsaw kind of... Jigsaw's given his like speech or whatever to Amanda. She's like bleeding out. Strom comes into like the weird workshoppy room right outside of it as Jeff is killing Jigsaw. And then we see... Rig go through the door that he shouldn't have gone through.
Isn't there, like, fucking writing all over it, too, that's just like, don't enter the door, Rig?
Yes. So the point of the clock was that he was supposed to let the clock run out, not race against the clock.
Jigsaw tells him 30 times in this movie, your problem is that you keep trying to save people. Don't try to save people.
So Rig goes through the door. Right before he goes through the door, Detective Matthews sees a figure and tries to shoot through the door at him with the one bullet he has, and it does nothing.
I mean, he took a chance.
Rig goes through the door. Rig ends up killing Art Blank while Art is taking the tape recorder out of his bag that he's supposed to play for Rig if he went through the door. The point of the whole trap thing with Matthews and Hoffman is that if Matthews steps off of the ice block, it's supposed to change the weight, and the chair that Hoffman is in is, like, hooked up to electrical currents, and the water's supposed to, like, electrocute him. But nothing happens.
Well, this is when Matthews dies.
Yeah.
And his head gets pancaked by those two giant ice blocks.
Oh, it sure does.
They just come swinging in from either side, and boop! Pop up like a melon.
Ugh. It's... Whew.
At least he's finally out of his misery, the poor bastard.
Oh my god, I know.
So then Strom takes a dip.
Right, so...
Or, I'm sorry, Hoffman takes a dip.
Hoffman takes a dip, but nothing happens. He doesn't get electrocuted or anything. And we see that, wrong. And we do see this look of, like, confusion on his face. But then we cut back to Strom. Strom has a key in his hand that he was given by Carrie. Strom shoots Jeff. So now Jeff is actually dead.
Hey, we finally got rid of fucking Jeff.
We go back to the tape for Rig. Basically, why did you go through an unsecure door? You can't save everyone, blah blah. Hoffman is getting out of the chair. He's good. He's fine. We find out that the note written to Amanda that was in the desk from the last movie was actually written by Hoffman, and that's why she was so upset about it.
Yeah, which on the envelope it says, "I know your secret," or something like that, if I remember correctly.
That was in Hoffman's office.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. The one about Amanda is basically like, "I'm going to take on his legacy, not you."
Yeah.
We then watch Hoffman shut Strom in the room where Jigsaw, Amanda, and Jeff's bodies are.
What?
And then we go all the way back to the beginning of the movie of the autopsy, and the tape finishes, and we realize that he's saying, like, you think you're going to walk away untested, like you won't, that the tape really is for Hoffman, and that Hoffman is the apprentice.
Son of a bitch, it was Hoffman the whole time.
And that was a very quick Saw 4.
Oh, well, that's just round one.
Jesus.
So, real quick, important things we learned. We learned a lot about Jigsaw's ex-wife, more fucking layers to his trauma and his craziness. Hoffman's the secret second apprentice after Amanda, and this franchise is great at, like, retroactively applying things to earlier stuff. So it's like, oh, Hoffman's the one that put Carrie in the trap.
Yeah.
And, you know, did this and that and this. Like, what the fuck?
Yep.
And also, this was the movie where audiences finally learned how the Saw franchise works, where in regards to the autopsy scene being at the beginning of the movie, but actually taking place at the end of the events, it's, if you're watching a Saw movie and something's happening, do not trust that it's happening at the same time you think it is.
Yes, exactly.
Reinforcing from part two's trickery, like, four doubles down on it. It's just like, you, the audience, do not, just don't believe anything you see. It's not happening when you think it is.
Yep. So Saw 5 is directed,
1 year later, Saw
directed
5.
By David Hackle.
Hackle. Spelled without a vowel that probably should be there.
Yeah, there's no E.
Just Hackle.
We're opening up with the trap again. So this is the pendulum trap, which is inspired by the Edgar Allan Poe short story, The Pit and the Pendulum.
But of course,
this guy will come to learn his name is Seth Baxter. He is tied down to a table, a flat surface, I don't know what it's called, and there's literally like a blade above him that's gonna start swinging and come down and cut him in half if he doesn't essentially destroy his hands, is what it is. He puts his hands in this thing and they like crush him.
And that's how he's supposed to escape.
Yep, there's a locked collar around his neck that's attached to the table that's supposed to open up. And he does the thing, but he dies anyway.
Which was, yeah, that was, it's one hell of an opener where you're like, he succeeded! And then it doesn't do anything.
Yep. We see, like, him, like, turn his head as he dies, and where his gaze is looking, it's someone's clearly watching through, like, a peephole.
Mm-hmm. The Jigsaw's M.O.
And then after he dies, the fucking collar opens, which, like, rude.
Seriously, insult to injury.
We get our title card. We go back to Strom killing Jeff and the door shutting on him. But when the door shuts, all of the lights went off and there's, like, glow-in-the-dark paint lining a hidden door in the wall. There's a hallway behind this door and there's a tape that's hanging from the ceiling for Strom, because everything has been thought out and it's a little annoying. And it's basically like, you can continue and try to find me, blah, blah, blah. And then guy in a pig mask, because of course.
Yeah.
I put a trigger warning here mostly for myself. This is the water cube trap.
Oh yeah, Strom is knocked out, wakes up, and his head's in a box.
I have a severe fear of drowning, which is why there's a trigger warning in my notes.
A glass box, right?
Yeah, he's in a glass box. We can clearly see him. We see there's tubes coming down into the box from the top. His essentially effects are on like a barrel too far away from him to reach. the cube starts filling up with water. It gets pretty far up past his mouth and nose and everything. Before he starts checking his pockets, he pulls out a pen. He takes the pen apart and stabs himself, essentially giving himself a... Is it a tracheotomy? Is that what you call it?
A homemade tracheotomy.
Yeah, so that he's able to survive.
I mean, ballsy and also very lucky. He just jams the pen casing into his neck and is just like, I hope this works.
I hate watching this scene. I hate it with a passion.
So many things about it just make you, like, shudder. Just bleh.
And then for some reason, every time I watch it, I have to hold my breath to see if I would be able to do that. It makes it worse.
Don't do that.
We cut to the police outside of the meatpacking place. Hoffman comes out. He's carrying Jeff's daughter.
And he makes himself the hero.
He tries to, and he's like, he didn't make it. Nobody made it. And then Strom is coming out on a gurney. And Hoffman's kind of thick.
It's literally like a hilarious moment where he's like, nobody made it. And then the ambulance people are like, we got a live one.
Hoffman's like, oh. Uh-oh.
I didn't know about him.
We get a scene of Jill Tuck was called by John's lawyer. He's got something that he wanted her to have after his death. There's a whole tape.
You get a tape. Everyone gets a tape.
Everyone does get a tape. And there's a key that she's wearing around her neck that ends up being the key to open up this chest or whatever. And the lawyer's like, if I may, like, what's inside? And Jill just closes the box.
I ain't telling you shit, lawyer man.
There's a press conference that they're saying, like, the Jigsaw murders are over. Hoffman's been promoted to, like, lieutenant detective or something like that. Strom's boss, Erickson, tells Strom that he is off the case. He's too close to it. He needs to go home and take medical leave, like he's done. We see Hoffman get the note on the desk that you were talking about. I know who you are.
Somebody knows.
Hoffman goes to visit Strom in the hospital. They get into this verbal altercation. Strom is like, I don't understand how you walked out of there. And Hoffman's like, how did you walk out of there? And Stroffman's like, with a fucking hole in my throat. Whatever. It's really obvious in this scene that Strom is very suspicious of Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
We then see Hoffman looking at some monitors of a current game that's happening.
Because this dude is working 24/7. Seriously. He does not stop.
What the heck?
This is the point. We're in movie 5, and it's at the point now where you're just like, how the fuck is all of this shit being set up all across the city, all at the same time? They've got like, if you follow the timeline of these movies and actually lay it out, there's like 12 games going on at the same time, or one after another.
Yep.
It's insane. And this is also the one I've been waiting for. This is the game with the 5 dumbass asshole people.
Yes, it is.
Including Darla herself. Fucking Julie Benz is one of the people in the trap.
Yep.
Who Buffy fans remember as Darla the vampire.
She looks completely different. It was very confusing for me. Like you said, we've got 5 people. They've got collars around their neck. This one's called the necktie trap. These collars are attached to chains, and if you look behind them, there's blades in, like, a V pattern so that, you know, if they got ripped back, it would decapitate them. Further out into the room, there are glass boxes that have keys in them. They have to be able to get to the key to unlock their lock, to get their collar free, and they all... I don't want to say take turns getting their key, because that's not what they do. They most of them get their key. But when
they're fighting each other the whole time.
Yeah, but when one pulls forward, there's no, like, slack on anything. So if one person goes forward, everybody else goes backwards towards the...
Yeah.
There's also a tape that says, like, you're all connected. Your instincts are going to tell you to do one thing, but I implore you to do the opposite. We learn that one of the women, who's the one who's going to die in this trap, was a fire inspector. That comes in handy later. By the way, there's also bombs in this room that are going to go off after 15 minutes.
Okay, we're just really, come on, whoever's playing Jigsaw right now, like, we're just going to blow everybody up. That's it.
So they, 4 of them get out. We watch the other one get decapitated in a very bad display of special effects.
Because, I mean, of course we do. A movie can't threaten a decapitation and not show it to you.
Well, it wasn't a very good one.
No, it wasn't.
And our Darla, who I'm now going to refer to her as because I don't remember her name in the movie, picks up all of the keys to keep with her, just in case.
I mean, that's smart thinking.
We see Strom doing some digging on, like, the computer and the files. He figures out that Seth Baxter is the person who killed Hoffman's sister. He also takes some files on the jigsaw case that he is definitely not have clearance to take home with him. We get a crime scene flashback of everyone, Hoffman included, being called to the Seth Baxter crime scene, and he's like, I know him. He killed my sister. He only served like 5 months or whatever. Like, fully admits that he knows him.
Yeah.
We then go to the second part of the trap with the now four people. I think they're just sealing jars. I guess that's what you call them. After a certain amount of time, more bombs are going to go off. The keys to, like, go into... There are these holes in the wall with grates so that you can, like, be sheltered from the shrapnel. The keys are in the jars that are on the ceiling, and you have to find them. And this asshole, this investigative journalist, who is one of those people in this movie where you're like, can you die already? I'm done with you.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember this guy.
Is just being an asshole, and he's the one who ends up just hitting all of the jars and breaking them, and everybody else gets the keys, and then he's like, oh, fuck, wait, and then he blows up and he dies. But we find out that we have had a fire inspector and an investigative journalist. We have someone who works for the city planning office. We have a trust fund kid. And then we have a vice president for a real estate company. I promise that all comes together in a way later. We get a Hoffman flashback because Strom is talking to himself and he's like, when did you first meet Jigsaw? So we get a Hoffman flashback. They're in, I don't know if it's supposed to be the building he lives in, but he goes into an elevator and John Kramer's just hanging out in the elevator. And Hoffman all of a sudden gets suspicious and he's like, what floor are you going to? And goes to, like, pull out his gun, and John gets the drop on him and injects something into his neck. I don't know what it is, but it puts him to sleep. We then have Hoffman in the shotgun chair. There's, like, a shotgun, like, rigged up and he's, like, strapped to a chair and he's looking in the mirror and seeing it, but then, like, Jigsaw pulls the trigger and there's nothing in the shotgun and it's just to, like, have him appreciate life or whatever. And then John reveals himself to Hoffman as Jigsaw and he's like, you could take me in, but I know what you did. Like, I know that you tried to make that trap look like one of mine. So it's like a whole thing about, like, I know what you did, you know what I did. Let's do some stuff. We then see Hoffman trying to make Erickson suspicious of Strom. So Hoffman takes Strom's cell phone out of evidence, calls Erickson, because Strom has just been like MIA, calls Erickson, hangs up, Erickson calls back, Hoffman shuts off the phone. I'm ahead of myself. Anyway, he's making him suspicious of Strom. And then
Right, it's all part of the ongoing plot.
Erickson also sees that there are some files missing, and Strom's the only one that could have taken those. Strom is now at another crime scene because nobody cleans up anything in this goddamn town. And he's at the barbed wire trap that I'm pretty sure is from the first movie.
Oh, the fucking, yeah, the dude, it's like the big cage and it's full of barbed wire and he had to like crawl his way. Yeah, that's from the first goddamn movie.
And then we get a flashback of Hoffman being the one that led Detective Tapp to Dr. Gordon. Like, Hoffman's the one that planted his pen at the crime scene.
Ah, a mystery that we didn't need a new answer for.
Right. We then, going back to our band of assholes, I don't know, we have the electric tub trap.
Oh, yeah.
So the door is locked, and the only way to unlock it is to get a current through to it. And the only way to do that is have, like, the water connected to the whatever the things are, but they don't reach the water. So they're like, oh, okay, so we have to kill someone and put them in the bathtub. So they do that. And they end up just the electrical current going through both of her hands and her feet, and then they, like, stab her in the head. The door opens. Whatever.
But, yeah, it's just more... The summation I want to give the listeners is that every single one of these traps requires teamwork, and in none of them is teamwork employed.
Yep. We then get a scene of Jill Tuck talking to Erickson. She says, I think one of your people's following me. And he's like, who would be following you? And she's like, the one that interrogated me, which is Strom.
Yeah.
More suspicious. We then have a flashback with John Kramer and Hoffman, they're setting up one of the games. Hoffman, this is where Hoffman takes his phone. Whatever, it's fine. Erickson then calls his officer, whatever, and is like, I want a locator on Strom's phone. Like, let me know when it turns back on.
It's just, it's Rig all over again, but, you know, more effective and just, we gotta make this guy, like, the villain's making somebody else look like the killer.
Yes. Hoffman goes to the workshop where all the monitors are. He brings a hot cup of coffee. I don't know why, but they zoom in on it. It's a whole thing. And turns Strom's phone back on.
Ho ho.
We then get to the final trial for our friends, and it's the 10 Pints of Sacrifice. And our Darla is looking at her keys and realizing that they're all exactly the same key. All of the keys would have worked, and this is when they realize that all five of them were supposed to get through all the traps.
Yep, the decapitation trap, they just needed one of them to reach a key and then pass it along to the rest of them, and for all the traps, it's just, if they had all just worked together, they would have gotten through with minimal pain.
Yep, each of the holes in the wall were big enough to hold more than one person.
Which, that's the most infuriating one in the movie.
Yeah.
They're like betraying each other to find space in these holes, and it's like, clearly, if you just look at them, like, three people can fit in each hole.
Yep. And then the bathtub, like, it wasn't meant for one person to do all of that, it was meant for all of them to share it and all have a small shock.
Yeah, they all would have just been like, you know, like, nothing damaging.
And then, so it's this girl left who's the VP of the real estate company, and the guy who's the trust fund kid and also a junkie is like, oh my god, your instincts are going to tell you one thing, I implore you to do the opposite, and he's kind of realizing it. We also get the background of how they're all connected is essentially a building caught on fire, was set on fire, and there were eight people who died in that fire, and it got covered up, and all of them had a role to play in it.
Yep. They're all bad people.
So this 10 pints of sacrifice, to open the door, 10 pints of blood needs to go into this beaker.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be 2 pints of blood per person. But now because we have 2 people, that's 5 pints of blood per person.
That's a lot of blood for one person each.
And they are supposed to stick their hand in, and there's like a table saw in there that's like cuts them between like their middle and ring fingers.
You're supposed to just push your hand into it.
Yep.
And with 5 people, it would have been, you need to injure your hand, but you'll get enough blood from everyone. With 2 people, it's, fuck you, you don't get an arm anymore.
Like, we see them afterwards, they do it, they open the door, but the guy's arm is literally in half, like, almost up to his elbow.
It's fucking gruesome. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I might have to go back a little bit on one aspect of this. That trap... No, even with 5 people, that fucking sucks.
No, absolutely.
Like, because it's not just like, oh, cut your palm a little bit. It's like, you gotta cut your hand open and bleed into this fucking thing. Even with 5 people, that's too much.
Yeah. But they do it. We see them succeed. We see the door open. We then see Strom is trying to, like, follow Hoffman in his tracks. And he's at this house, which I learned from IMDb, that the house that Agent Strom is running through while chasing him is actually the nerve gas house from Saw 2 that had been renovated by Hoffman.
It all comes together.
So this is all Strom following Hoffman and them doing the realization and finishing the trap is all kind of like these back and forth shots. And then Erickson is in the warehouse because he's followed Strom's cell phone. The two of them finish the final trap and they come out and they see Erickson, and this poor girl is like, we did it, we won, and then just passes the fuck out. Erickson sees the monitor, sees Strom's cell phone, feels that coffee is still hot, and puts out an APB on Agent Strom.
The coffee reveals all. Is it so literally he had a cup of coffee just so that this could happen?
I think so. Someone
else could find it and be like, it's still warm, he must be nearby.
I think so. And then I just want to mention that actual animal blood is used for this final trap.
Gross.
The director said they wouldn't have used it, though, if they knew how bad it was going to smell.
Yeah, that's, don't do that.
So while all of this is happening, Strom is, you know, trying to follow Hoffman and kind of thinks he's got him and then goes into this room and he's not there. Instead, there's this glass coffin in the middle of the room with, like, shards of glass inside of it with a tape that basically says, like, the only way for you to survive this room is to get into this coffin, which obviously Strom's not going to trust that. And then him and Hoffman end up fighting. Strom pushes Hoffman into the coffin and Hoffman starts, like, panicking, like, acting like it's a whole thing. And Strom's like, tell me how to get out! Tell me how to get out! Because the door is now locked and Hoffman just points back to the tape. And the tape says, you know, if you don't trust me, this room is going to be where you die. And the walls start closing. And the coffin kind of, like, dips down into the floor so that the walls can go over it.
It was a trick.
Strom is trying so hard, okay? He's climbing up on everything. He realizes there's, like, a grate in the ceiling. He's up there. He's kicking it. He's trying to get it. We get this really gruesome but pretty cool scene of his, like, the bone coming out of his arm because it's crushed. And then he gets crushed and he's dead.
He is squished. And fucking Hoffman is just laughing his way to victory in his little coffin underneath the floor.
Yeah, he is. The glass in the coffin, by the way, that he fell into was made of rubber. I thought that was kind of cool. And that's how that movie ends. Hoffman's in a coffin and Strom is dead.
And everyone thinks Strom was the killer.
Yes. Hoffman in a coffin is very satisfying to say.
That's a fun sentence.
I liked that.
All right. So, to update where we are in this franchise, Jigsaw's dead.
Yep.
He's dead, dead, dead. Amanda's dead. Hoffman is the secret third apprentice, or second apprentice, third killer. And he's basically just doing it because he just hates criminals and wants to murder them.
Yeah.
And Jigsaw was, like, trying to blackmail him into helping, but he kind of just took over.
Yeah. We do see, too, that Hoffman has been there from the beginning, like, during... We went all the way back to the nerve gas house, and Hoffman's like, why do you need Amanda in there?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And all this. And Jigsaw says something about, like, if you learn to figure out the human mind, it leaves nothing to chance. Which freaked me out, because that's a good chunk of what I do for work.
Psychology is fun and terrifying. But, yeah, so fucking Hoffman's the bad guy now.
Hoffman's our guy.
You walk out, it's 2008, you walk out of Sci-Five, and you're like, okay, well, they've squeezed all of the juice they could get out of Tobin Bell, and it's just Hoffman from here on out. We can't possibly ever see John Kramer again. And then you fucking Saw 6 marketing comes around, and it's like Tobin Bell in the credits, and you're like, no, he's gone! He can't be in the movie!
He's in all of them, I think.
He's in all of them except for Spiral.
Yeah.
The man dies in the third one.
No. Let me give you some quick numbers.
Let's do it. Let's talk money first, because money talks.
Saw 4 had a budget of $10 million. Box office made $139.4 million.
Who doggy? This is still a winner.
Saw 5 had a budget of $10.8 million. Box office made $113.9 million.
Not as much, but still plenty to make a studio happy.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, how are they keeping these budgets at $10 million? That's insanely impressive.
I don't know, but I like the cover art a lot for Saw 5 because it's Jigsaw wearing a mask of Jigsaw.
Yeah, that one is cool. I just want to go back real quick, because I know the first movie was, like, super cheap. It was, like, a $1 million or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 to 1.2 is the estimate. And then Saw 2 is $4 million, and Saw 3, 4, and 5 are all about $10 million was the cost.
Yep.
Which is, like, yes, it's increasing over time, but not... Saw 6 is $11 million. Saw 3D, $17. If you go back to, like, the 80s and you look at the Friday the 13th franchise, it's like one movie will be, like, $3 million, and then the next movie will be, like, $10 million. Like, they'll jump up, like, super high, and they'll keep going up until they stop making a profit.
Right.
Lionsgate was just, like, they somehow were able to restrain themselves and were, like, each of these movies, cool $10 million. We don't need to spend more than that.
I do like Lionsgate quite a bit.
They do good work. So, obviously, general audiences are loving these movies because they're very profitable horror films.
Yes.
How do the critics feel about them?
Ooh, the critics do not like them.
This is when the critics turn on this franchise hard.
So Saw 4 has a tomato meter rating of 18%.
18% of critics liked this movie. Only 18% of critics.
But has an audience score of 62.
Which, hey, it's given horror fans what they want.
And then Saw 5 has a tomato meter rating of 13% and an audience score of 52.
Ouch.
Yeah.
It's worse on both scores. They're both wrong. Like, the audience for the 4 is at least it's a positive rating. It's got the popcorn. But for Saw 5, it's the audience equivalent of rotten.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I'm going to give you a couple quick reviews for each, and then we'll have a little discussion.
Okay.
So, one of the fresh reviews for Saw 4 from Jamie Russell from BBC.com says, "It's deeply unsettling, just like a horror movie should be."
Yes, that is accurate.
On the other hand, Allie Gray from theshiznit.co.uk, whatever, reminder that Saw 4 opened with an autopsy scene, says, "The first thing you see in Saw 4 is Jigsaw's balls. A sign of things to come? Most definitely."
Okay. I do want to real quick point out, I was also looking through some of these negative reviews for Saw 4, and a lot of them follow a theme of, uh-oh, this franchise has reached that point where it's beginning to run out of ideas and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
So, a lot of people at the time were in agreement that, like, okay, this has just become a franchise now. It's just, they're just doing things over and over again and making money.
Yes. For Saw 5, a fresh review from Jordan from New York Magazine says, "There's heartwarming cooperation and redemption, but also vicious backstabbing, and it makes for the best murder house dynamic in the franchise."
I like that. Murder house.
Yeah. And then someone named Anders from MovieDex for a rotten review says, "Saw 5, you'll wish you hadn't."
Puns.
And that,
I mean, that's just good review writing, even if I don't agree with it.
I know. It's these movies are a trip, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, so I will admit, so here's the funny thing about me and this franchise, is I saw every single one of them in theaters day one, of course.
Yes.
But 4 and 5 was about the point where I started turning on the franchise, just because I liked watching Jigsaw, John Kramer, as a villain, because he at least had that angle of he wanted the people to get out of the traps.
Yes.
You know, like, as flawed as his logic is, at least there was that underlying goal. Hoffman just wants to use it as an excuse to kill criminals he don't like.
Same thing.
And that's kind of boring. Like,
same
why not
thing
just
with Amanda.
Kill? Yeah, well, at least Amanda was, like, psychologically flawed. Like, at first she believed in the mission, but then she quickly, like, lost faith in it, so there was that whole conflict angle.
True.
Hoffman, it's like, dude, why don't you just if you have the power to kidnap these people and put them in these elaborate traps, why don't you just kidnap them and then just fucking execute them? Like, it's so much simpler.
Yeah.
And it's like, he uses Jigsaw as, like, a cover, like, the Jigsaw killer is still out there, and it's like, but you're the Jigsaw killer.
Yes,
You're hiding behind your own identity.
It's a whole thing, and I also kind of started to lose it around Saw 5. I still love the franchise, and I love the... I'm really weird, and I like puzzles, and I think that's why I like the traps. But it definitely got a little, okay, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
Because we only have, what, 3 or 4 traps where people are actually able to get out?
I know.
From, like,
at this
the very
point,
beginning?
It's just all fucking people getting killed.
Right.
Except for our boy Art.
Oh, Art. Well, Art does get killed. It's just not, he didn't do anything wrong. Rig was just like, eh.
And then these two movies are also when the series hit peak the timeline and series of events are, like, wrapping up on themselves. Like, everything's happening at the same time. We've got every flashback reveals another layer to the character's past that, like, you didn't know was there. Like, it's starting to get a bit convoluted.
Yes, absolutely.
And, on a personal note, this was also when I lost my mind, like, especially by Saw 5, because I was that guy sitting in movie theaters in Saw 2 after wondering for a year, like, what happened to Dr. Gordon? And then Saw 2 introduced the idea of a secret apprentice with Amanda. From the end of Saw 2 forward, every single movie, I'm like, Gordon's going to be revealed as the secret apprentice. Gordon's going to come back and be a secret third apprentice or whatever. Blah, blah. And every fucking movie, it doesn't happen. And I'm getting angrier and angrier. And when Hoffman becomes revealed as an apprentice, I was just like, done. I was like, no, you fuckers. Why isn't it Dr. Gordon?
That's fair. That's very fair.
Oh my god, it just, every movie I got angrier and angrier, because I'm like, the logical thing is to have him be revealed as a secret apprentice because he escaped his trap. The same thing happened to Amanda, it should happen to him. And they just don't even talk about him in any of these movies.
Yeah. We'll find out later, don't worry.
Oh, I know. And it didn't really make me any happier.
Let's do what we learned, and then let's give these movies some subtitles.
Okay. What do we learn from Saw? Well, I mean, right off the bat, the most obvious one. Saw 5, we learned teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah.
Even if teamwork involves maybe losing some blood.
Yes.
But if you're doing it together, you won't die.
Maybe. Yeah.
Saw 4, the lesson is listen to what your therapist is telling you, especially if what your therapist is telling you is if you go through that door, everyone dies.
That, oh, like, Rick. It just bothers me, because if I watch movies like this, I'm like, you're not clearing the room. You didn't, your back is to that corner. What are you doing? And he's just busting through the door. I'm like, sir.
Yeah, Rick's kind of a bad cop.
Come on.
And, like, he's a SWAT team guy, too, so he should definitely know better about, like, clearing rooms and being prepared.
Right.
Dude's just bull rushing through everything.
Let's see, what did I learn from Saw 4? Oh, sometimes you're supposed to take things literally.
Yep.
I think that's a good one.
What's that English class lesson? Sometimes the curtains are just blue.
Yes.
When you're reading a book, sometimes you don't have to look for the deeper meaning in things. Sometimes the author is literally just describing the scene.
Yes. From Saw 5, I learned to not go anywhere without backup.
Oh my god, yeah. Like, that's this whole franchise.
Strom should not have even been in that building or on the case or anything, but like, if he had somebody else with him, maybe he wouldn't have ended up crushed.
Yeah, I mean, it would have made it a lot harder for Hoffman to frame him if he wasn't running around doing things like a rogue cop.
Right, he got way too obsessed with it. What do we think about subtitles?
That's a tricky one. Saw 4. I love how the poster I have up for Saw 4, the like tagline is just, it's a trap. And I'm like, are we referencing Star Wars?
Yes.
It's a trap. But Saw 4, I mean, what do you even... It's about Rig. He's running around. He shouldn't just do things. He should just hang back and let things happen. It's a tricky one. How do you sum that up in a subtitle?
Hmm.
I mean, if you want to make it a more meta subtitle, it could be like Saw 4, The Secret Apprentice.
Mm.
But that just makes it sound like a Harry Potter movie.
It does.
There's going to be fucking... You're a jigsaw, Harry!
Saw 4, The Unsecure Door. Well, that sounds like Chamber of Secrets.
Yep. There you go.
Damn.
Saw 4, rip Detective Matthews.
Oh. Likes Detective Matthews.
You know what his problem was? I forgot to mention this as we were describing it. He screamed when the ice blocks were coming down to crush his head. And what did we learn from Dead Silence?
Oh, you can't scream! That's so smart.
Yep. Poor guy. Never stood a chance.
Ugh.
What do we think about subtitles for Saw 5?
Ooh, I had one. And then I don't remember. Oh, another one for Saw 4 could be Saw 4 Jigsaw Laid Bare.
Jigsaw Laid Bare. There you go.
Saw 5.
Saw 5. Five nuts in a room. I don't know.
Five heads are better than one. Oh, wait.
Yes! That's it! Five heads are better than one. Holy shit, man. You just nailed that in one go.
That'll work. I like that.
Wow.
Recommendations, obviously, if you've seen the rest of the series, continue on. If you haven't, you're going to be real confused.
Yes.
Don't start me here.
Me and Sarah have not yet reached the point where we're not recommending the Saw movies. That'll come later.
What specific movie that I'm going to recommend nobody see? Yeah,
but two. They're still interesting up to this point.
They are, yeah. So next week, you'll hear me break down 6 and 7 in a very rushed way as I did these two.
Yes, and 6 and 7, which 7 is actually called Saw 3D because they fucking missed their chance.
Yeah.
But I guess it's sometimes also released as Saw the Final Chapter, which we all know that's fucking bullshit.
Absolutely.
Saw 6 and 7 were originally kind of the end.
I do think they were meant to be the end originally, and then someone was like, actually...
Yeah, which is crazy, though, too, because they're still making just about as much money as all the rest have been making. But I think even the creatives were like, we are out of ideas, so we're going to wrap this up and call it a day.
And then someone else wasn't out of ideas.
Yeah, but it took, let me see, Saw 3D is 2010, and then the movie that comes after it came out in 2017. So it took a while before the series was revived.
Yeah, it did.
But yeah, it'll be exciting next week to talk about the end of the proper storyline of Jigsaw.
Well, that should have been 3, but, you know.
This is what we got. All right, well, I've got nothing else.
Nope.
It was a good talk. And look at that, you came in at a pretty good time for two movies, so you nailed it on your first try.
Hooray!
Yeah, this didn't take 2 hours.
Good for me.
Alright, so we'll do it again next time, and in the meantime, everyone out there remember, don't get too scared.